Take a moment to imagine our world. I wonder, can you think of one thing, if changed, would transform our society? Maybe you might think about the environment. If we could just change our attitude towards the natural world, then society would be transformed. In the Greek and Roman world of Paul's day, if you wanted to transform the society, you needed to transform what was known as the Roman household. The household, from a Roman point of view, or even from a Greek point of view, was the most basic institution of the Roman world. It was considered the building block of society. According to Aristotle, the Greek household, the Roman household, was made up of three key relationships: the relationship between a husband and a wife, between a father and his children, and between a master and his slaves. Now, as 21st century people, we will immediately notice that Greek and Roman households were patriarchal. They were male dominated. Philo, a Roman historian, and Josephus, a Jewish historian, wrote that a man's authority over his household was critical to the stability of society. Literally, the man of the house held the power of life and death of those living in that house. In the Roman world, women, children, and slaves were considered on a par with property. The husband, the father, the master ruled the roost. The Roman household would be what we would call today a sacred cow. To mess with the Roman household was to mess with society. And that brings us to the Apostle Paul. Paul wants to show that Jesus is supreme over all things. In fact, that's what he's been doing in these three chapters in his letter to the Colossians. Jesus is supreme. He's Lord over every aspect of life. And he wants to show that when it comes to Jesus, when it comes to his lordship, there is no such thing as sacred cows. And so Paul picks the sacred cow of the Roman world, and he begins to reimagine it. He begins to reimagine it in light of Jesus, in light of the gospel. And this is what we have in Colossians 3, 18 to 4, verse 1. Now, let's be honest, this is not an easy passage. And as we read this passage, we're faced with challenges as 21st century people. This is the challenge. We read this passage through 21st century eyes. We can't help it. That's who we are. You and I live in a time in history where we have at least 200 years of human rights under our belt. And because of that, when we read passages like Colossians 3, we find some of the words and some of the phrases jarring, to say the least. If we were being kind, we would be tempted to describe what Paul is saying as dated. We might describe Paul as lagging behind history or on the wrong side of history. So we face a challenge as 21st century Christians reading this passage, because we can't help reading it through 21st century eyes. But before we read Colossians 3 as 21st century Christians, it's essential that we do our best to read it from the perspective of a first century Christian. So we want to ask questions such as, what impact would Paul's words have had in Paul's day? As I mentioned earlier in Colossians 3, 18 to 4, verse 1, Paul begins to reimagine the Roman household. For Paul, Jesus hasn't simply come to save us from our sins. For Paul, Jesus has come to create a new humanity. And he's already talked about that in the earlier verses of Colossians chapter 3. What Jesus has done in his life and through his death and resurrection is that Jesus is creating a new community, a new humanity, which is in stark contrast to that of his day. And so Paul takes the sacred cow of the Roman household, if you like, as a case study, and he asks himself the question, what does this look like now that Jesus has come, lived among us, died, and been raised for us? What does a new Roman household look like in the light of the gospel? Well, the Roman household, as we've said already, was made up of three key relationships: the husband and wife, the father and children, the master and the slave. And it's on these three relationships that Paul is focusing his attention. So if you've got your Bibles open, you'll see that in verses 18 and 19, Paul focuses on the relationship between husbands and wives. 20 to 21, it's father and children. And then 22 to 4 verse 1, it's slaves and masters. Paul, in these verses, is reimagining the Roman household in the light of Jesus and the gospel. Maybe it's just worth pressing the pause button there for a moment and saying that one of our callings as Christians is, in the light of Jesus, in the light of the good news, is to reimagine our world. So one of the things that we've been doing in recent harvest festivals has been focusing upon creation care. And as we've been doing that, what we've been doing is reimagining our world in the light of Jesus, in the light of what Jesus has come to do. And we're to do that not just with the natural world around us, we're to do that in our friendships, in our marriages, in our family lives. We're to do that in our workplaces, reimagining, allowing the gospel to trigger, to inspire our imagination, and to try to think and imagine and dream, what would this look like if Jesus could put his thumbprint on it? And it might be worth our while spending a few moments prayerfully just thinking through the week ahead and just wondering, what would my week look like? What would my life at work look like? What would my neighborhood look like if it was reimagined in the light of the good news? Let's go back to Paul. So Paul is reimagining the Roman household. And as we'll see, actually, he's stripping away and rebuilding the Roman household. And a couple of things worth noticing before we actually get into the text is that it's worth noticing who Paul speaks to first. So have a look at the passage, verse 18. Who does Paul speak to first? As we've mentioned already, in Roman society, men ruled the roost. But look who Paul speaks to first. Paul speaks to women first. In Roman society, a woman was generally dependent on her husband to pass on information. But here, Paul speaks directly to women. He addresses them before he addresses anyone else. And Paul doesn't stop there. Paul doesn't simply address women directly. He does exactly the same with children and then with slaves. Paul's assuming that women and children and slaves are actually going to be physically present in the church congregation. And so he speaks to them directly, not through their husbands, not through the fathers, not through the slave masters, but directly to them. Now, I appreciate for us that this seems like a small thing. But in Paul's day, that was a remarkable statement. The very fact that Paul would speak directly to slaves and children and women conferred on them position, value, worth. And this was unheard of in Roman society. Already, Paul is beginning to reimagine a Roman household. And notice that he speaks to them directly and he gives them instructions. Now we may jar, as 21st century Christians, we may jar at what Paul says to them. But the fact that he gives them instructions is conferring on them responsibility. It's a challenge for us to appreciate just how empowering this would have been for the slaves in that congregation, for the children, for the women. Listening to Paul's instruction. And on the flip side of that, how uncomfortable this would have been for husbands and fathers and masters, listening to Paul speak directly to their slaves, to their children, to their wives. That must have been unsettling. And they must have realized from the get-go, my role, my position is radically changing here. In a world where women, children, and slaves were considered property, this is in fact a statement. It is confirming position, value, and authority on those who generally were treated like property. The second thing that it's worth noticing is that Paul redefines the Roman household, and he removes the man from the head of the whole household. He strips away patriarchy and he replaces the man with Jesus. No longer is the husband, the father, the master, the head of the household. Jesus is now the head of the household. Again, this is Paul reimagining the Roman household. Masters are no longer head of the house. Fathers, no longer head of the house. Husbands, no longer the head of the house. Jesus is now the head of the house. And notice how he does this quite subtly. So in verse 18, he'll say to wives, "Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord." So a wife's relationship with the Lord is defined as to what is fitting in the Lord. Verse 20, "Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord." It's Jesus who's the motivation behind the relationship between a child and a parent. And verse 22, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord." Paul is subtly tearing down patriarchy here, and Jesus is becoming the head of every house. So with this in mind, how would a first century Christian, note that, how would a first century Christian receive Paul's words in 3:18 to 4:1? Well, let's take it, we'll do this quickly, but let's do it phrase by phrase. "Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord." So a wife, first century wife, sitting in the congregation, hearing those words, would have thought, well, that's normal. That would have been reasonably normal for a Roman household. And for a woman sitting, listening to Paul's letter, those words would have come as no surprise. It jars with us, though. It jars with us as 21st century Christians. It wouldn't have jarred with a first century Christian. Furthermore, Paul's call to submission actually begins to differ from the household code of his day. It's really helpful to read Colossians 3 alongside Romans 5. Both letters deal with very same issues. And in Ephesians, in a very similar text, what Paul is calling for is mutual submission. Paul, if you like, is redefining the relationship between a husband and a wife, where a husband will submit to his wife and a wife to his husband, to her husband. And that is drawn out in Paul's next phrase, "Husband, love your wives and do not be harsh with them." That would have been normal. In fact, that would be normal for us to say, "Husbands, love your wives and don't be harsh with them." That's a given, isn't it, in a 21st century world. But it's a radical departure from the household code. Husbands needed to stop thinking of their wives as property, normal in Roman society, and begin to love them. And again, if you compare Colossians 3 to Romans 5, you see that that love is the same love with which Christ loves the church. And this would have been culturally jarring for men in Paul's day. Harshness would no longer be tolerated. It's not the way that you would relate to anyone, let alone your wife. Instead, husbands are being called to love their wives. That love modelled by the cross, a love which is self-giving and self-sacrificial. Being a Christian man, a Christian husband, in first century Rome, hearing those words spoken or being read out from Paul's letter would have been quite radical in Paul's day. And then it goes on, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Similarly to women and slaves, children were considered in Roman culture virtually property. But here again, Paul speaks directly to children. And there's an expectation that children are going to be in the congregation listening to what Paul is saying. They too are going to be part of this new humanity. And note that the call is to obey not fathers, but both parents. The norm in the Roman household was that the priority relationship was between the father and the children. But Paul is turning that on its head. The relationship between the child is to be both with the father and the mother. Obey your parents. And Paul goes on then to address the fathers in the congregation. Their fathering has now changed because of Jesus. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. This again will have been jarring for fathers in Paul's day. And then we come to slaves and masters, verse 32 to 4, verse 1. And note again that the expectation is that the slaves are going to be present in the congregation as these words are read out. Slaves are also part of this new humanity. They are told by Paul to obey. Why? Because Jesus is their master. Jesus is now the head of the household. And notice how Paul speaks to the slaves present in the congregation, verse 24. And notice what he says to them, that they will receive an inheritance. Only Roman sons received inheritance. Now slaves in this reimagined household will receive an inheritance. Paul is, because of Jesus, treating slaves as sons. And don't forget that this letter, the letter of Colossians, will have been delivered to this church by Onesimus, a runaway slave, someone whom Paul describes as his faithful brother. Paul is reimagining the place of slaves in the church, but he's reimagining the place of slaves in society. He goes on about to speak to masters. Masters are called to stop viewing slaves as property, but to treat them fairly and justly. Paul is humanizing the relationship between masters and slaves. Why? Because both they and their slaves have a common master. See, Jesus is now the head of the household. He's the master in the house. Paul is rehumanizing the congregation around men, children, and slaves. As we come to an end, and bearing in mind that this is how a first century Christian would have heard Paul's words, how do we as 21st century Christians read Paul's words? Perhaps, and we're going to be doing this briefly, I could mention two or three things. Here's the first one. To be careful that we are not tempted to be disappointed by Paul's words in Colossians 3. As 21st century people, The temptation is to focus on how far short Colossians 3 falls when compared to our day. The question is often asked of this passage and also of Ephesians 5. Why does Paul not go further? Why did he not call for the total emancipation of women? Why does he not call for the total abolition of slavery? I wonder how you would answer that. And that's a great question, and it's an uncomfortable question, and it's a question that we need to wrestle with. Was Paul afraid that if he did call for the total emancipation of women and the abolition of slavery, was he afraid that Christianity would simply become a social reform movement? That's one thought that has been expressed. Another thought expressed in a remarkable book written by Tom Holland called Dominion. In this book, Tom Holland asked the question, why is our 21st century world still shaped by the Christian faith? And he describes Paul's words in Colossians 3 and Ephesians 5 like a depth charge. So a depth charge goes off in the deep and creates a ripple effects and goes on affecting society down through the ages. And Tom Holland's argument would be that the emancipation of women and the abolition of slavery were directly connected to these words that we find in Colossians 3 and Ephesians 5. So we need to be careful as 21st century Christians not to be tempted to be disappointed with how far short Paul falls compared to our day. Another thing worth reflecting on as a 21st century Christian is the idea of Jesus' lordship. So Paul strips away the patriarchy of the Roman household, but it's not that he then leaves or creates a vacuum, because in its place, Paul is recreating a society where Jesus is Lord, where Jesus is the head of not only society, but of families and places of work and so on and so forth. But for some of us today, 21st century people, we value the idea of freedom and personal rights. And the thought of Jesus's lordship might be an uncomfortable one for us. Is Jesus's lordship to be trusted? Will it simply be just another form of patriarchy? I'm reading Dane Ortlund's book that he's most recently written called Gentle and Lowly. And it's a book that simply describes the person of Jesus. It's a beautiful book. We really commend it to you. Dane Ortlund, Gentle and Lowly. And in it, he describes the lordship of Jesus. And he uses that picture of the yoke of Jesus that we are invited to take upon us. This is the picture that Jesus uses himself. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. This is what Dane Ortlund says. Jesus's yoke is kind and his burden is light. That is, his yoke is a non-yoke and his burden is a non-burden. What helium does to a balloon, Jesus' yoke does to his followers. We are buoyed along in life by his endless gentleness and supremely accessible lowliness. He doesn't simply meet us at our place of need. He lives in our place of need. He never tires of sweeping us into his tender embrace. That is the very heart of Jesus. And so when we see Paul removing patriarchy and in its place placing the lordship of Jesus, we need not fear the lordship of Jesus. The lordship of Jesus, and I love that. I love that picture of the lordship of Jesus is the helium inside the balloon. It actually creates a place where we flourish. It's life-giving. And so let's not be afraid of the lordship of Jesus. And lastly, in coming back to something that we spoke about a little bit earlier on, this passage also invites us to reimagine our world in the light of Jesus. I love the story of Robert Greenleaf. You may, for those of you who have done any studies in leadership, you may have come across Robert Greenleaf. He was born in Indiana just at the turn of the 20th century. And after college, he went to work for AT&T. And for the next 40 years, he researched management, development, and education. And all along, he felt a growing suspicion that the power-centered authoritarian leadership style so prominent in the United States was not working. And so in 1964, he took an early retirement and he founded the Center for Applied Ethics. And in 1970, he published a paper entitled Servant Leadership. Here's what he said. The servant leader is servant first. Becoming a servant leader begins with the natural feeling that one wants to serve first. Then conscious choice brings one to aspire to lead. That person is sharply different from one who is leader first. The difference manifests itself in the care taken by the servant first to make sure that other people's highest priority needs are to be served. The best test and the most difficult to administer is this: do those served grow as persons? Do they, while being served, become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous, more likely themselves to become servants? For me, that is a picture of someone reimagining, in this case, the workplace in the light of Jesus, the ultimate servant. So in our society, and in us personally, there is no such thing as sacred cows. Personal or social, if Jesus is truly Lord, then Jesus is Lord of all. So maybe as we enter this week, we allow the life of Jesus, this life defined by gentleness and lowliness, that we allow Jesus and this wonderful gospel of grace and mercy to allow us to begin to reimagine the world that we live in. And so as just as Paul took the sacred cow of the Roman household, so we take the sacred cows of our world, maybe the sacred cows of our personal life, and we begin to allow the good news of Jesus to transform and to reshape them. Amen.